It's good to see you folks this evening. Welcome. You've tuned in to the Heart of Freedom. I'm Doug Pullen, and it's a pleasure to have the chance to practice with you this evening, to share these teachings and to share a community with you. And so this evening, before we dive in, like to share with you a welcoming, and this welcoming comes from our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, and it's in this spirit that we come together to practice. So this community that we're part of is committed to making the exploration of these practices that we do really relevant and accessible for everybody who's interested. So I want to extend a warm welcome to all people of every age, ethnicity, culture, heritage, religious background, socioeconomic group, ability, sexual orientation, gender identity, and in this way, following the footsteps of the Buddha, who offered his teachings of awakening and freedom freely, without exception. So it's in that spirit that we come together to practice. So welcoming ourselves, welcoming all beings to join us in this community that comes together to wake up. And so in the service of that, I'd like to invite us to just to tune in and to be comfortable, to get settled, maybe letting eyes close or just softly downcast, but to really bring the focus in, setting aside cares and concerns from the day, preoccupations, and as much as possible to just come into the space of presence, to be here in the present moment, and to attend to this miracle of being alive that we often take for granted, that there is this body that sits, that's in contact with the earth through the chair, the floor, the sitting cushion. And through this contact, to connect really with our sitting spot, we take this seat, take what is referred to in Buddhism sometimes as taking the one seat, the seat of our own awakening. The Buddha, 2,600 years ago, went and sat under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya and made an intention to stay present. And so, following his example, we can do the same thing. We take this seat. And with this intention of presence, there's then being curious about what it is that actually sits here this evening. Setting aside concepts and ideas, and to just let go or let recede into the background any expectations about what we're supposed to find or what's supposed to happen, and to just be curious about what is here, including pleasant sensations, including unpleasant, including things that maybe are in between, more neutral. And if there's a way that we can come more fully into this experience of life through awareness, but perhaps starting to just sweep through the body and just notice if there's any places where there's kind of a disconnect or a contraction or constriction, tension. See if we can bring some awareness, and that might be just allowing things to soften. Places where we tend to maybe chronically hold on to stress or tension in the body, like the face or neck and shoulders. Sometimes it's more chest or diaphragm, belly. So with an intention of kindness and presence, to start to, just to be here with whatever's happening. And to start to let our awareness both be present with these sensations and also hold the intention to be alert in our posture, so that as we relax, we also, maybe it's a little easier to sit in an upright or alert posture. Makes it easier to attend. So there's a kind of feedback loop that happens. And to just to consider for a moment that as we come more fully into presence, we're tapping in to the pre-existing capacity to be awake, to be alert, that is our birthright, really. It's the Buddha within, taking refuge in that capacity to bear witness to this life and to discover for ourselves non-conceptually, directly, what's true. That's taking refuge in the Dharma. And to understand that we practice in context, in community, in interbeing with life, and with other Sangha members who are gathered here this evening. And that could be taking refuge in Sangha. And it's as simple as this breath, this moment, these sensations. Discovering what's most alive in the process of breathing in this moment. Where the sensations of life are expressing themselves, and to receive that invitation. each and every successive sensation, experience of breathing, changing feeling or mental state is an opportunity to smile and say yes to this too. There's room in the spaciousness of this present moment awareness to meet this moment with kindness, even if it isn't what we're expecting or what we're intending. Stepping out of the stream of thinking, out of identification with thoughts, commentary, judgment, decision-making, expectations, and just letting the stream kind of wash past you. No need to cling, no need to resist. Stepping out of that stream into the fresh and spacious present moment, where there's this breath, these body sensations, and there is a willingness to abide with what is happening with life, these body sensations, these feelings, and there is the willingness to abide and accept what the stream of life is offering in this moment. But there's this quality of radical acceptance and kindness that's just part of uncovering our true nature. Just by staying present. And if we find ourselves getting caught up in clinging or resisting, then usually it's in one of five categories that we find ourselves. The Buddha described those as the five hindrances. We're either resisting something that's unpleasant and we're caught up and identified. Maybe it's physical pain, maybe it's mental, emotional pain. We're clinging to something that's fleeting or longing for something that isn't present. We're anxious or agitated. The mind is preoccupied with something, or the body is feeling agitated. Or there's sleepy dullness, sloth and torpor. Or maybe it comes in the form of doubt or dispiritedness. And so these are all qualities of mind and body that can be recognized as such. And to notice the body sensations that correspond is often a gateway to freedom. Just the naming of, oh, it's like this. This is how this shows up in the body. Is establishing mindfulness in the fertile ground of the great composting elements of consciousness that come in the form of the hindrances. And there's an acceptance implicit in turning towards this moment with mindfulness. This mindfulness is free from judgment and commentary, trying to figure things out. It's just, it's like this. This moment is like this. this practice of presence to notice if there's any subtle or not so subtle expectations about what should be happening. We can recognize them as such, and it's possible to experience more freedom, more peace, tranquility. So surrendering to this moment, it's constantly changing, and we come to a place where we're willing to let it be just as it is. This breath, these body sensations. It's wonderful to see you folks this evening. Welcome. There's an invitation to take mindful curiosity into stretching or movement if there's a need or a desire, just to give yourself a little opportunity. We've been sitting still for a little over a half an hour, so yeah, might be good. And yeah, just to notice the contours of sensation in the body, and maybe the intention, if there's movement, we can notice the intention to move, and then stay present with the just a variety of sensation, maybe experience some relief or perhaps release from constriction, tension. And I'd like to share with you a poem this evening as we transition into the rest of our evening together. This is a poem by Steve Taylor. It's called Be Gentle With Your Mind. Be gentle with your mind. Don't overload it with demands or fill it with too much information or pressurize it with too many deadlines until it frazzles with strain and can't work for you anymore. Your mind isn't a machine. It's a sensitive artist. it gets agitated easily if conditions aren't right, aren't suitable. And then its inspiration fades, and it can't give birth to new ideas and insights. Your mind is full of flowing energy like a river, but it gets polluted easily if you don't protect it from stress and overstimulation. And then the energy turns toxic and you feel sick inside. So be gentle with your mind. Just allow it to be filled with space, not clogged up with information. Just allow it to be soothed with stillness, not bombarded with stimuli. Then your mind will serve you with quiet and easy grace and bring you an endless flow of gifts from a place beyond the mind. So, like to take the pulse of the group this evening. And of course, it's totally optional to have your pulse taken. And so I'm referring to an invitation to check in and just to hear from some diverse experiences that might be present this evening. And it's just a brief, this is what's on my mind or heart or happening in my body this evening. And if you'd like to share your name, that's wonderful. And then when you're finished sharing, to just say, I'm finished, so the next person could know that it's their turn. And also to kind of keep a nice clear space for sharing that's safe, to not do crosstalk. So we really make this a mindful ritual where we really listen and are staying centered in our own experience. So I'll get us started. My name is Doug, and I'm feeling energized and really deeply supported by our coming together this evening. I was a little exhausted earlier, but now I feel like my energy is back, and I think it's because I get to share with you. So thank you. I have spoken.
I am Michelle, and I was just feeling a little disappointed today. I think I wanted to see more spiritual connection with things that I do for work, but in career. But I think it is what it is. Anyways, that's all. I'm done.
Hi, my name is Karen, and I really turn off the fan here. Okay. I'm just feeling very happy and lighthearted because we get to spend the afternoon celebrating my son's partner's birthday, and we went to high tea, and it was just very fun. Mm-hmm.
So just in this space here, where maybe you're sitting with the possibility of sharing. I just realized there was one thing I forgot to mention, which is coming up this weekend on Saturday the 5th, Candle Summers is offering a day-long retreat at PIMC. It's from 10 to 4. It's on keeping practice simple. So you can go to the Portland Insight Meditation Community website if you want to register for that. And also just to mention that we are operating on our collective generosity here, and it comes in multiple forms. And so first and foremost, I want to say thank you for all of the support that's come in the form of volunteer energies at PIMC, form of financial support. I really feel grateful, and I feel blessed. And so just a reminder that it's also a way to kind of keep to keep that flow going, to practice Dana in whatever form works for you in your life. And I posted in the chat a link to the virtual Dana Bowl. And also there's an invitation if you aren't on my contact list for Heart of Freedom. You could just simply send me an email and I'll make sure that you get on the list for announcements and event information that has to do with the teachings that I offer. So there's that. So I'm just going to circle back. Anybody want to share anything before we dive into the Dharma talk? So, Jamie, I can see that you're speaking, but I can't hear you. Can other folks hear Jamie? Okay, so I think there's some problem with the sound, and my guess is you're pretty savvy with technical stuff, so you probably know the options. I could give you some ideas, but you got it. So, okay. So you're welcome to post in chat if you'd like to share, so we can see that. And yeah. Sorry, we can't hear your voice this evening, at least in this moment, but maybe we can read your words. So. So, just checking, anybody else wish to share? Okay.
Yeah, this is James. I just want to say I was kind of feeling a little bit down earlier today, but it really feels good to be here and practice and see everybody. So, thank you.
Okay, yeah. So, Jamie, is it okay if I read it to the group? So this is Jamie sharing. I mean, you can go to the chat, watching all the climate impact around the world, the heat waves, the animals suffering. It's been pretty hard to find simple joys while it feels like the world is literally burning because of our greed and ignorance. Not a very jolly share, but that's my pulse feeling this evening. Thank you, Jamie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, so I have a simple Dharma reflection reminder to offer to this evening. And so just to practice noticing how these words land for you, and particularly how it might connect with your own experience, and what might be a reminder that's useful, or something that might help deepen your practice. So I'd like to share a reflection on working with expectations mindfully. So without noticing it, it's possible that we can be suffering from the myriad of different manifestations that expectations can bring, and kind of cause distress. And so it can even feel like a kind of a tyranny of expectations. They can plague our lives. They can cause us to be irritable, disappointed, and even disillusioned. They can even lead us to say unkind words or act unskillfully or not make the best decisions sometimes if we're, you know, feeling kind of overwhelmed or impulsive. There's a kind of an insidious aspect to unobserved expectations that I want to point to this evening for our practice and hopefully for our benefit. And to the degree that they persist, they can, cause suffering in ways that we may not have noticed. And that's the thing that I find kind of amazing about it, to the degree that we aren't aware of them. They cause a lot of suffering, and sometimes they only come to our awareness after we turn towards the suffering, after we get curious about, gee, I'm out of sorts, I'm a little off today. What's going on? There's that old adage, well, I got up on the wrong side of the bed. But usually there's something going on in the mind that's clinging to an idea of what should have happened or what's supposed to be happening. Now, this isn't always under the radar. There may be a few big ones that we're aware of, but even so, we aren't always totally, truly, clearly aware. We sort of notice them. And we may not actually act to free ourselves from their tyranny, from their running roughshod over our mental, emotional well-being. And so I'm suggesting it's only when we actually feel the acute disappointment that we have with some awareness that we can recognize that we've been possessed by expectations about the way things were supposed to be or are supposed to be. There can be lots of expectations. Like the coffee maker is always supposed to work. And when it doesn't, like that's like not, just, that's not supposed to happen in the morning. Or there was something else that happened recently. Oh, yeah, my electric toothbrush stopped working. Well, that's not supposed to happen. I'm supposed to be able to just take that for granted. I mean, I'm picking really mundane things, but there's all kinds of things. Other people should agree with me about any number of really important things in the world. And if they don't, then that's horrible and awful, or there's distress that goes along with that. And so with this, there's dissatisfaction, impatience, tension, and they turn up in many forms, from what we expect of ourselves to what we expect of others, and we of them. And we can have high, low, or even negative expectations. So, and we usually have at least some large ones and thousands of small ones that arise every day. Large expectations are usually striving that are kind of part of our universal human experience. So, for example, we may expect certain efforts should yield desired results, or believe that we can be in control of our lives, or be totally convinced that the so-called good life must have particular things, like there should always be enough connection with other people, I should always be able to get the support I need, or there's all kinds of varieties. And we can be enslaved by these. What defines a good marriage, a good person, success? We expect to behave in a manner that we know is right and expect to be treated similarly. One of the things I noticed driving around town is, maybe some of you would notice this, other drivers don't drive the way I think they should. Anybody else experience that? I am delighted when someone is courteous and lets me in, or doesn't cut me off. But I'm also noticing that the mind goes into everybody should drive politely and not aggressively. And of course, the world would be a better place, but that isn't what's happening. So there's that. One of the things that mindfulness can do is help bring us back into, things unfold in the world in ways that are not really under the control of this ego, of this, bag of encapsulated conditioning that believes it knows how the world should be. It's possible to find freedom from attachment to expectations. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have a sense of what we think is an expression of what our deepest values and beliefs are, or preferences about the way we'd like life to unfold. It's just when we become addicted to those expectations being met that we suffer. So it isn't really even, in a sense, the expectation that's the problem. It's the demand that it be met, and that there's an emotional charge or stress to that. I just have a little technical challenge here for a moment to fix. My battery isn't getting charged for some reason. Okay, there, I fixed it, I think. Okay. So, one of the things that it's possible to do, if there's, with a certain quality of curiosity and mindfulness, we can start to let go of any shame or inferiority that we feel because we aren't living up to our expectations. That's the place where I see a lot of angst and unsatisfactoriness or suffering. So there's good news, and that's kind of the bedrock of the Buddhist teaching. The good news is that we don't have to continue to suffer from the tyranny of expectations. It's changeable. It can change through mindfulness and kindness, self-compassion. And even a little bit of effort makes a huge difference. But we need to turn towards the expectations, be curious about them, observe how they manifest, and be able to access another way of approaching our relationship with life. And in Buddhism, in Buddhist psychology, expectations are almost always the result of what's called wanting mind. And I mentioned that when I was describing the hindrances this evening. The wanting mind is driven by desire, aversion, and anxiety. It creates an illusion of solidity and control in a world that's constantly changing and unfolds independently of how we believe it should be. And so if we understand that, question is, how can we free ourselves from expectation? And in this mindfulness practice that we do, we always start with what's true in the present moment. So we use discernment to know what's true, but staying clear of identification with judgment, which is just another form of expectation. And so the judging mind that comes up in meditation is, in a sense, really an example of expectation. You should do this, you shouldn't do that. It's like the peanut gallery. It's like in the Muppet Show. I don't know if any of you ever watched the Muppet Show. There's the guys up there in the peanut gallery that are yelling all of the kind of goofy advice. Well, a lot of times our brains have that. And so there's, when we turn and look at it, a lot of times those judgments and expectations actually don't really make a whole lot of sense. Or they're based on some kind of earlier conditioning that where we survived based on a belief that we could control ourselves or the world. Sometimes we deal with trauma like that, where we, in order to have a sense of safety or trust, we bring that quality of judgment in. But it often doesn't serve us in the long run. We can find freedom here in the present moment, to the degree that we notice those expectations for what they are, a kind of often an incessant sort of peanut gallery of inner dialogue, and but we can be more discerning about what's helpful and what isn't with mindfulness. In contrast to expectations, we can open up to possibilities. Possibilities are always in the present moment. We're alive to the mystery, to what's actually unfolding. So we can actually live life as fully as possible, based on what our values are, what our deepest values are, which reflect preferences for the future, but don't assume that the future will come to pass, because we realize that the future is unknown. Being open to possibilities acknowledges that we may think we want changes with time, or that there is another future that will bring equal or more happiness, or that the future may turn bleak, or that we may die before the future can unfold. Real joy is then when we can just enter into the mystery of what's unfolding and adapt to the life that's actually here. Being guided by our values, our deepest values and beliefs. So living life, a life that's open to possibilities, is more like a request. It's more like a prayer or an act of witnessing your faith in life. Your well-being isn't contingent on the future. Your mind is open and inspired in this moment. And therefore, you have more access to imagination, intuition, connection. And by doing that, we actually create the best possible future. It's through being fully present and embracing this moment that we condition the next moment, instead of trying to steer it or control it completely, really just trusting that our hearts, our deepest values and beliefs can guide us in the direction that's going to lead to the best future. So with this practice of working with expectations, it's this ability to respond to change rather than react to it. That's the primary distinction. That distinction is between those who are caught in suffering and those who are free. We might find ourselves reacting to behavior of others or to the changes in our circumstances and never realize it was because we were expecting others or our lives to be a certain way. So when we react this way, we're opting not for the mind of possibility, but for the mind of expectation, and then left disappointed, hurt, lost, angry, defeated. And so if any of those emotions are present or mental states, it's really good to ask the question, what was I expecting? What was the mind clinging to? What was I holding on to? That's actually right at the core of the Noble Truth's teaching. First Noble Truth is that there is dukkha, suffering, unsatisfactoriness. Second Noble Truth is that there is a cause, and the cause is clinging. And in this form that I'm speaking to this evening, the thread or the variety of clinging is in the form of expectations. So to make that, and dukkha is to be explored with mindfulness and kindness and a sense of our shared humanity. So to explore expectations is to free ourselves from them. The end of dukkha is always found in the direct, mindful, loving, kind experience of it, the skillful experience of it. It isn't when the conditions aren't right and we're overwhelmed or stressed or exhausted. Probably that's not the time to take a deep dive intentionally into dukkha. It's through good self-care, through practicing in a way that was reflected in the poem that I read, that we create the conditions to unearth and free ourselves from expectations. So I'd like to share a story. This is a brief story. It comes from Philip Moffat, who's a teacher down at Spirit Rock, and was describing his experience with a student who attended his weekly meditation and complained for a couple of years about how inadequate her meditation was and how she never made any progress. She bemoaned her inability to concentrate, criticized herself for repeatedly getting lost, and her self-appraisal was very sincere, and her face reflected tremendous pain. And she was disheartened by, but felt she was being honest with herself. And Philip, on the other hand, thought her practice was going great. He repeatedly told her and pointed this out, that she was suffering from having unrealistic expectations about what a good practice should look like and feel like. And she was never relieved by his words, but she kept up her practice, coming almost every week. Then, just as she was making a major transition in her life, retiring from her job to pursue her spiritual practice, one of her daughters became seriously ill with a life-threatening disease. This required Beth to to completely abandon her own plans and move to another city to care for her daughter full time. And Philip didn't see her for several months. But then one day she returned to meditation and her face was aglow. "My practice saved me," she exclaimed. "I was calm, mindful. I didn't fall into resentment or anger." She paused and then continued. "I was just there for my daughter. I was compassionate towards myself and her. I want you to let everyone in the class know the very difficulties of her life had revealed the true strength of my practice. In contrast to expectations, there's the actual experience." So, just an invitation this evening, can you feel or sense the freedom that exists in being able to respond rather than react when life goes other than you had planned? It doesn't mean that you won't kind of unconsciously create expectations over and over again. And no one's expecting us to be perfect, which in itself is another expectation. But the practice of being mindful of expectations and compassionate with ourselves when we feel caught in them is so that we can acquire the skill to let them go. So it isn't that we get rid of expectations, it's that we aren't tyrannized by them. They aren't ruining our enjoyment of life. That's what freedom from expectations means. And it is what the Vipassana teacher Sharon Salzberg described as just starting over. When you realize you're creating expectations or caught in them, you see them for the suffering they represent, and you just start over and come back to this moment when it's like this. I'd like to share with you a quote from Ajahn Chah, one of my favorite quotes from him. He's a now deceased Thai forest master. "Do everything with a mind that lets go. Don't accept praise or gain or anything else. If you let go a little, you'll have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you'll have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace. Your struggles with the world will have come to an end." And I like the way that that suggests that it isn't a all or nothing thing. Practice is, you know, practice. And it gets easier with time and effort. So I'm going to pause here just for a moment. Or whatever time is necessary to just check in and see Is there any sharing or questions?
Is it a timing thing that is kind of the expectation? Maybe it's just not the right time for something?
Well, I think that certainly is a part of it. I mean, if we expect that we're going to get a raise and that isn't what's happening at the time that we expected it to happen, yeah, then there's certainly a timing aspect to it. And, was there something in mind in particular that you were thinking about, Michelle?
Oh, I just pitched a book. I was kind of hoping it would go forth, and it's a really good story about, it was a memoir, but anyways, basically everybody loves the story, but it's not really marketable. It's like one of those stories that you need and everybody needs to hear in a way. I'm not everybody, but it would be helpful, and it's not really in the consciousness right now because of so many other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It had to do with, going through some suicidal thoughts in my 20s and kind of like coming through out of it with finding help and stuff like that, and having somebody listen and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's just not going to sell.
Yeah. So larger conditions, causes and conditions, culturally, whatever, it's not the right timing. Yeah. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's part, maybe it's the expectation that I have is that everybody is going to, I want to stop their suffering and, be able to get the meaningful relationships, but that's just not realistic. That's taking away their journey.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a multitude of causes and conditions that we absolutely have no control over. And, we can put ourselves out there, make requests, or share our gifts with the world, and they may or may not be received or responded to. I want to share... Kathy, I see you probably want to share, and I just noticed Jamie posted a chat. Are you okay if I read Jamie's chat first, Kathy? Okay.
Of course.
So Jamie shared, expectations that I be treated a certain way feels like having healthy boundaries. It doesn't feel like a good idea to let go of those. Can you clarify the definition of the two? Yeah, for sure. So expectation, being treated a certain way with respect, or having your boundaries respected, it could be a reflection of self-compassion, of healthy self-respect. And this may be semantics, but expectation, as I'm describing it, is being attached to that always being the case. And unfortunately, that isn't always the case. We don't always get the respect that we deserve as human beings, the recognition, the space, the boundaries. So even though that is absolutely healthy, skillful, I'd say a set of values, to the degree that I'm attached to those as expectations and that's not what's happening, then there's distress, there's suffering. That's not to say that we can't take action, of course. If someone's disrespectful, like not honoring our boundaries, Absolutely. We need to step, you know, we need to speak up or take action. But that could be done without believing the mind that says it shouldn't be like this, because it is in this moment. This is the way things are. There's an example from Sharon Salzberg in her book, Loving Kindness. She described journeying to visit her teacher, Manindraji, in India. I think he was in Calcutta at the time. And she was mugged on the way. Someone tried to steal her purse. And she asked her teacher, "What should I have done in this situation?" And Manindraji said, "With all of the loving kindness in your heart, you should take your umbrella and wallop the fellow over the head with it." So it isn't about not having boundaries. It's more about the mental state. It's about what's happening inside in relationship to the experience. Now, I don't think Manindraji was suggesting, and I wouldn't endorse that as a invariant prescription for when you get mugged. That may not be the most skillful thing to do, but I think it exemplifies the point that to have freedom to respond instead of react. So anyway, does that make sense? Okay, yeah, thanks. So Kathy, you've been patient. Would you like to share?
I just had an anecdote that came to mind that is relevant to this discussion. And it was a teaching, it was a talk I heard many years ago when I was still on the East Coast from Sylvia Borstein, a Buddhist teacher who, a lovely woman. And she was giving a talk, and she used the example of her GPS in her car, and this was kind of in the earlier days of GPS, being a Buddhist teacher for her, and in the following way, she said, "Sometimes, you know, it tells me to go this direction, but I don't go that direction. I go a different direction, or I don't take that turn." And you know, the GPS in our car would just say recalculating, and turn in a different direction. And it's sort of the example of what you're talking about is not reacting as if it could, but responding to, okay, it's not going to be the way I thought it was, so we're gonna look at it differently and recalculate. And it was just, it's really struck with me because it's an example of what you're talking about now, but also an example of like equanimity and a lot of other concepts, I think, in Buddhism. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kathy. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I often get a kick out of and chuckle when I decide not to follow the GPS. And you know, I know it's my personification of it, but it sounds like it's like, okay, yeah, and there's a little, it sounds like, and of course it's totally the creation of this mind, that it's like a little irritated that I'm not following its direction. It's like, oh no, turn left up there. It wants me to do a U-turn or something. But anyway, I get a kick out of that. But I think that's great. Yeah. Other sharing or questions? So it's possible that we will be surprised when we discover how much choice we have in letting go of expectations. to truly be in the moment, to not be defined by expectations, requires a certain kind of mental clarity, more conditioning by love, compassion, empathy, and equanimity, like you were mentioning, Kathy. And, you know, if you hear this and you're hearing it as an inconceivable challenge, I just invite you to just set aside your disbelief in your ability and be curious about it. And maybe take a really discrete period of time in your life, some part of the day, maybe doing a simple activity, and just notice with that simple activity, do you have any expectations about what should be happening in this activity? And see, like, is it okay to just wash dishes without leaning in to the expectation of how it should go, how long the water should stay warm, how sudsy the soap should be, or any other dimension that the mind has expectations for. So a simple practice can be a starting point. There's nothing to be gained really by clinging to expectations, but there's a lot to be gained by living out of our values with a sense of invigoration or energy. And when we practice staying in the sacred now, the future takes care of itself as well as is possible. The Venerable Ajahn Sumedho calls this trusting your practice. It's an acknowledgement that you cannot know the mysteries of how life is going to unfold, or even if a certain outcome that seems desirable would, if it occurred, truly be beneficial. And at the same time, it is the declaration that you can attune yourself to that which is loving and benevolent. And actually, what else can we choose to align ourselves with that makes any sense? And do these values not offer the best prospects of any possible future? I think I was talking recently, if we want peace, we need to be peaceful in the present. If we want love, we need to practice being loving. Those are the core teachings of the Buddha. The means are the ends. That's skillful understanding. So I think that's everything I wanted to share with you this evening. There is another really brief poem, maybe before we do the closing. This is a Hafiz poem, 12th century Persian poet Hafiz. It's called "The Sun Never Says." Even after all of this time, the sun never says to the earth, "You owe me." Look at what happens. With a love like that, it lights the whole sky. So this is the power of giving life without the burden of expectations. It's, giving without, there's no quid pro quo. No, it's not transactional. So there's that. So let's do a close with a little metta practice. It's just an invitation to connect with or deepen into wishing ourselves well and this is here in the present moment. It's cultivating the heart and mind. And so, yeah, maybe there's something that you'd like to hold as a metta aspiration, intention, without it being an expectation. Yeah, what are those deepest values and beliefs that you'd like to actualize in this life? And so just reflecting on what would your heart and mind long to hear? What brings balance? What brings peace? And it may just simply be, oh, wish me, I accept this moment just as it is. Or may I abide in well-being even when life is like this. Or whatever words really resonate with your heart. And yeah, just let this be a few moments here of cultivation, planting those seeds with loving intention, noticing how it feels in the body and in the heart and the mind. This is what it's like in this moment to wish ourselves well. And to the degree that it's there's energy and willingness to extend our wishes beyond the sense of a separate self, realizing that ultimately there is no separate self, but in the relative reality that there is, expanding it out to include those beings gathered with us this evening in practice. Here's an opportunity to share our wishes of well-being, the blessings of the heart extending. Yeah, wishing you well. May you be free from any tyranny of expectation and come to rest in the freedom and love and peace that's always here in the present moment. And yeah, to feel our collective energies supporting these wishes of well-being going out into the world and moving to touch those beings who are near and dear to us, who couldn't join us in practice this evening. Family, friends, co-workers, and then expanding to include those beings who are known to us, beings who are unknown, and moving in the four directions, to the north, to the south, to the east, to the west, to human beings, to beings of the air, land, waters, seen and unseen. May these healing wishes go out in all directions. And you're invited to join me, if you wish, on if you're on Zoom, can't really do it on Facebook, but you're welcome to join in even if you're on Facebook. But on Zoom, you're welcome to unmute and join me in doing a little chanting in closing. And the chant is one we mostly all know, which is, may all beings be happy. And we'll do that three times. And then sadhu, which means so be it, three times. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Sadhu, sadhu, thank you, dear friends. Thanks for joining me in practice this evening. And once again, please take what's most relevant and helpful and put it into practice or deepen your practice. And anything that's not helpful, just let it go. So you take the good stuff. And be safe and well. And I hope to see you again next week.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, everyone.
Take care.
You bet.
Yeah.